the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the latest edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. I'm Andy Katz, along with my co-host Seth Greenberg. We got a lot to get to on this Monday morning. We'll be joined by North Carolina head coach Roy Williams, Baylor head coach Scott Drew, and Purdue's Matt Painter. We'll look back at this past weekend and look ahead to what should be a very interesting Jimmy V Classic, with Duke taking on Florida as the headline game, Purdue taking on Arizona State. But before we get to college basketball here, Seth, I have one quick thing to ask you related to one of our favorite topics that we'll get deep into, certainly when we get into February, March, which is the selection committee, because college football suddenly is having to deal with it. And I had an interesting conversation with Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo on Sunday night. We're talking about scheduling, and certainly that became a major issue with college football, because Washington, which is now in the top four at number four in the college football playoff, this was their non-conference schedule. They played Rutgers, Idaho, and Portland State. And as Tom and I were talking about, if that were a comparable college basketball team that played a weak non-conference schedule, that team would not be a top seed. Where do you see sort of the difference between the college football playoff selection committee and what we normally see with college basketball?
I think the difference is, Andy, that the football schedules are made so far out in advance, and there are so few non-conference games. So, it's extremely difficult. You'd almost say if you're a contender, you might want to leave one date open, and hopefully television can get you a made-for-TV football game like we do in basketball. If I'm Oklahoma I'm Penn State, and I'm saying, wait a second, I don't have to play Pitt. I could have played Portland State. Maybe I'm in the college football playoffs. So it is difficult, but it's all how you perceive your program. I think what's happened is Washington was in a position of rebuilding. When you're rebuilding, you want to get some wins early before you get into league play. Pac-12 is a very deep conference in football. Coach Peterson scheduled, or the university scheduled, in with that in mind. It'd been struggling. On the other hand, you see a place like Oklahoma, who has a rich tradition, and quite honestly, they're expected to play those tough non-conference. My biggest concern is, look, you're not going to go undefeated in your conference unless you play in a bad conference. So there's one loss. If you play a tough non-conference schedule, you better be pretty good in football, because that second loss is probably going to be the difference between maybe getting into the top four and not getting into the top four. So I think basketball is a little different. Our scheduling is a little bit more fluid. You do schedule your non-conference exempt events early out, but you always have room to play with a little bit, to schedule special games. And, in Tom's situation, he scheduled his stuff before he thought Dede was going to be gone. Deontay Davis, if he's back, this is a different team even with all the injuries. So it is something that I think that college football coaches and college administrators are going to look to. And I think that it's something that the committee is probably going to have to address. But it's the same problem we have in our game.
Yeah, it's funny to see them go through the same thing that we discuss all the time in college basketball. But you make a great point that I didn't hear much over the weekend, which is Washington, was in a rebuilding situation. And obviously these schedules were done pretty far out. All right,
well,
so let's get back.
Street and those guys need to pay better attention.
I know. They got to have you on the set as well.
Joey Galloway, Danny Cannell, let's tighten it up.
All right, so let's go on to the quarter, kind of off the court. Let's start out with South Carolina, because Sidarius Thornwell indefinitely suspended Frank Martin, the head coach of South Carolina, who's been a frequent guest on this program, saying it was telling me last night it was one of the hardest things he's had to do because he's so close to him, treats him like a son, but clearly had violated team rules, and he's going to be out for quite some time. He's their best player. Those are his words. I mean, he's averaging 18 a game, 4 assists a game. Clearly the most significant player on their roster. He misses the Florida International game. Clearly it sounds like he's going to miss their game against Seton Hall next week. They have a break this week, obviously probably because of exams. They're 8-0. What's the effect on South Carolina?
It's huge. And, you know, here's the thing. Exactly what Frank said. He feels like he's treating him like a son. And that's what you do as a parent. No means no. There is a certain level of expectation when you're a member of that basketball program or you're a member of his family. And, you know, if no means yes to a player or a team, if your best player is treated differently than the rest of the people and has a different set of rules than the rest of the players in your program, then you don't have a program because you lose your locker room. No means no. And sure, it's a huge impact on the South Carolina team that at times can get stuck offensively. Now, PJ Dozier is going to have to step up and be more consistent. Dwayne Notice is going to have to be more consistent. So it's a tremendous impact. And look, we know that Frank's teams basically win with their defense. And when you have two seniors basically at the point of attack, that's really special. You only have one, and now you're going to have to bring some younger player in, less experienced. I mean, they've invested 4 years in Sundarius Thardwell. And it's got to kill you as a coach. I'm suspecting, I don't know for sure, but I'm suspecting it's probably going to be a three-game suspension. Maybe it isn't. I'm not sure. But look, you make a bad decision, you're accountable for your decisions.
All right, let's shift to the injury front, and let's start with Michigan State. Miles Bridges out for at least a couple of weeks with a foot injury. And, you know, look, the schedule you would think on paper is okay for them to absorb this, but as we've seen with Michigan State, you can't take anything for granted because Florida Gulf Coast easily could have beaten them at home. So they knock off Oral Roberts 80-76. Nick Ward, freshman, scores 24 points, 10 boards. Josh Lankford had 9. Cassius Winston had 15. So they lean young without Bridges, who, by the way, is also a freshman. They don't really have a choice. But here's their schedule, Seth. They got Youngstown State, Chattanooga, Northeastern, which won at UConn, Oakland, which will be a very difficult game and always is when they take on Michigan State. And that's all before they start the Big Ten at Minnesota on December 27th. So that's what's ahead of Michigan State with potentially no Miles Bridges. What's the effect there?
It's huge. I mean, he's your best player. He's your best rebounder. He's your best low post scorer. He's your best rim runner. He's the guy who everyone focuses on in terms of their game plan. He makes the game easier for everyone. He's explosive. He's a guy that makes plays that bring your home fans to their feet. This is such a unique experience for Tom because he's relying on freshmen. When I think of Michigan State basketball, I think of guys invested in the program. I think of guys that have grown with the program, that understand the system, that understand the culture. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at Cassius Winston. You're looking at Josh Lankford. You're looking at Nick Ward, who probably would have been redshirted if, you know, Deontay Davis didn't leave and Gavin Schilling and Ben Carter were healthy. The personality of your team really changes. Your locker room really changes with everything that's gone on at Michigan State this past offseason. So it's huge. I mean, they've got tough games. I mean, Northeastern's going to be a tough game. Oakland, obviously, a rivalry game. They were very fortunate to win that game last year. Kay Felder is obviously gone, so that's the difference. And then Minnesota's, you know, I think they're 7-1 or 7-2. And
on the road.
Yeah, on the road. Amir Coffey is a good player, and Lynch is, the transfer from Illinois State is a big body, and that backcourt returns. And, it puts a lot of pressure on Aaron Harris. Tum Tum's going to have to, even though he's not a focal point of what they're doing, he's got to be a focal point of their locker room. And that's what people don't understand. When you have a young team, the key is having a strong locker room and having a strong voice in that locker room. And most times you'd like that voice to be a person that is a contributor. You know, last year they had Denzel Valentine, Bryn Forbes, Matt Costello. They've always had a strong voice in their locker room that was a good player. Now, Tum Tum Narron is a terrific leader, but I'm sure he's a strong voice. But he's not a guy in the culture of our game today where other guys are just going to turn and say, because he's not doing it on the court. And that makes it a little bit more difficult in that leadership position. So I mean, Tom's got to figure some things out. They got to figure out how they can score. Nick Ward has a chance. I mean, he's a big body. Their biggest question is when they get in the league play, how does he guard ball screens? How many minutes can he play without staying getting in foul trouble? Josh Langford missed early in the season with injury. He'll play his way into being a very good player. He's got a toughness and a physicality to his game. But you talk about a small margin of error. This is a small margin of error.
All right, a team that might be able to absorb a injury a little bit more is Indiana. OG Anunoby is out with an ankle sprain. Missed the last two games, home wins over SIU Edwardsville and Southeast Missouri State. They got Houston Baptist next, and then they got a showdown with Butler on Saturday the 17th in Indianapolis. Let's assume that he's out for that. Then they got home games, Delaware State, Austin Peay, and then who knows if he's out longer, but they got a brutal stretch there end of this month where they start the Big Ten against Nebraska at home, okay, fine, but then they play Louisville on a neutral court, and then they continue the Big Ten with Wisconsin and Illinois. If OG is out for an extended period of time and misses games like Butler and maybe Louisville, what's the effect on that with Indiana?
Yeah, I said this before the season. I think OG Anunoby is the best defender in college basketball because of his versatility. He can guard out in the perimeter. He can guard in the post. He rebounds the ball. He runs the floor. He started to settle in and see a bigger basket. Look, Indiana has depth. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Indiana has terrific depth, and that's going to serve them well. But when you lose a player that impacts the game in so many ways, who can defend, like you look at the Butler game. Here's a perfect example. Keelan Martin, tough matchup. Big front court player or bigger power forward with skills. Perfect matchup for OG. Without him, Juwan Morgan probably have to handle that defensive assignment. Right? Not that Morgan isn't a good player, but this is an Indiana team that has improved defensively, that's more alert. Robert Johnson is buying into being a lockdown defender. Josh Newkirk did, I thought, a terrific job against North Carolina. They're getting a mindset of getting stops, and now you lose your best defender. You also lose a guy that can get to the glass, a guy that can score around the basket, a guy that has a toughness and a physicality to his game. So it's a loss. They can endure it. The most important thing is bringing him back when he's healthy. If it's a high ankle sprain, which I guess that's been said, it takes a while to come back from those things, and you don't want that to be a lingering injury with a team this good, a team that could win a national championship.
So a week ago Sunday, I was with the Zags down in Orlando after they knocked off Iowa State to win the Advocare Invitational, and talking to the coaching staff in their locker room, they were talking about that Arizona game and saying how they owed one for Arizona because Arizona had come back and beat them a number of times in a row, and it had stung. And if there was ever a year to get Arizona, this was it. No Alonzo Trier, still out for undisclosed reasons. Ray Smith out for his career over after being injured. Arizona struggling a little bit right now to find its identity without some key players. And so they take on Arizona in L.A., and they get out to a commanding lead, give it up, and hold on. And you said this, Seth, on Twitter. You said, this is Mark Few's most complete team. I would say I told you that weeks ago, but then I would sound like a guru, which I am not. So your impression on the Zags?
If I was a guru, I'd go to Vegas. But there are a lot of gurus out there. It's amazing gurus never tell people when they were wrong. You ever notice that?
Yes.
Look, when I say most complete team, because here's what I say. They've got great depth in the backcourt, and they've got experience in the backcourt. Their addition of transfers and fifth-year transfers has changed this team. When you have a guy like Jordan Matthews from Cal who can jump up and knock down shots, son of a coach who gets it, whatever role you're asked to be in, he's going to embrace. When you have Nigel Williams-Goss, who transferred and practiced and has size and almost in a lot of ways wants to prove something because even though his numbers were good at Washington, they didn't win games, and there were kind of rumors he was a little selfish. Well, he's not playing selfish at all. Johnny Williams gives him athleticism. Zach Collins, the freshman from Vegas, McDonald's All-American, gives him bounce and skill at that position till he can make shots. And then you got Shema Karnowski, who I think you put him in front of the rim, it's hard to move him, and he can score over his shoulder. You throw it into him, you dig down, and he is not a good passer. He's a great passer. Josh Perkins has improved to the point where, I mean, he's just a very good player, and you know, Silas Melson is a guy who can make shots. So, I mean, this team is complete. They don't have – they have athleticism. They have size. They have depth. They have big guards. About the only thing they don't do right now is turn you over and get easy baskets out of their defense. Everything else, they're really good at. They can shoot the three. They can post you. They can play inside out. They've got size. They can protect the rim. You know, if they could just find a way to get a couple of easy baskets out of their defense, I mean, it's hard to find a more complete. Now, you know, again, I don't want to go through every one of Mark's teams because Mark's had ridiculous consistency.
Yeah, he doesn't buy that this is his best team.
And or his most talented. He shouldn't yet. He shouldn't yet. First of all, if he says that now and it's December, you know, really what have they done except beat Arizona? So, you know, it's early to say that, but as an outsider that has not studied every one of his teams, and he's had so many good teams, when I say complete, I think this is a very complete team, especially in the culture of college basketball, because you have youth and experience. You've got guys that have been there and done that, and you've got guys that are excited to be there because they've been in other situations where it didn't work out. So I just think it's a really good basketball team.
And the one thing I'll just add just to put a bow on it is we're about to be joined by Purdue head coach Matt Painter.
Always need a bow on it.
Yes, is I would just say that unlike previous Zag teams, they have great room for growth with Tilly and Collins. A lot of times he's got veteran teams right at the beginning, but those guys are only scratching the surface and they're only going to get better, which I think will make the Zags better going forward. So I think we are ready to be joined by Purdue head coach Matt Painter. He'll join us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And as we told you at the top of the show, Purdue will take on Arizona State in the Jimmy V Classic. That game, 7 o'clock Eastern time at Madison Square Garden on ESPN Tuesday night. And Matt, you know, you guys, I wouldn't say you're flying under the radar, but you certainly have had, once again, a solid start to a season. There's great expectations with this group that you certainly could challenge for the Big Ten title. You had an unbelievable game against Villanova in the Dave Gavitt games to start the season. Great atmosphere. Ended up losing that game 79-76. At this juncture, as you head into this ASU game, what do you think is this team's identity?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to, to figure out. I definitely think we don't have yet that defensive identity. And during stretches versus good people, we do some good things defensively, especially at the end of games. Our guys have been able to, get stops and defend versus some quality opponents. But we haven't done it, for 40 minutes. And I think that's going to be losing Rafael Davis and A.J. Hammonds. That's the number one thing that jumps out for us. Is their ability to defend. And so we're different in the fact that we have big people, but we don't have rim protectors. And then we don't have that lockdown, type defender. So that's what we're working towards, just being that good, cohesive team defensive unit and not trying to be, something that we're not. But we still have too many breakdowns. And the other thing that has got us is our turnovers. We have way too many turnovers. We shoot a good percentage with our big guys, and plus we lead our league in three-point field goal percentage. I think we're at 43, and we shoot a lot of them. So it's a great thing when you shoot a lot of them and you make a lot of them. And plus, you've got a couple big guys. But we turn the ball over too much, and it really hurts us and stretches. And turnovers for us get magnified a little bit more because we're so big. So that unexpected – obviously, turnovers are unexpected. An unexpected turnover, you got a couple big guys at the rim. Now they got a long run. They're behind the play. And a lot of times you don't catch up to the play. So for us, it's very important that we knock those down. The other night we just had 9 of them, and that would be great if we could keep the number right there. And so we're getting better. I like our group. It's really a bunch of good guys. I know you guys hear that probably a lot. I don't know if it's always true, but coaches say that. Oh, yeah, I like my guys. They're good guys.
Well, to that end, though, I was just mentioning, Gonzaga with Collins.
I actually do like my guys.
No, I'm sure, and you should. But in terms of individually, where do you think you guys have maybe the most room to grow where a player could really just blossom over the next 2 months?
Well, I think Carson Edwards is the one that's made a jump as a freshman that sometimes you just don't know as freshmen. They're talented. They can, they score a lot when you play in Spain or they play, scrimmages, then you get to games and it's not the same. He's been able to play a little bit of both now. We have Spike Albrecht, who's out indefinitely with a back injury. And, he's been able to really kind of pick up the slack. We've inserted him into the starting lineup. Fast, quick, can score off the dribble. Gives us something we don't have. We had a guy before I got here named Willie Dean That was a really good player, a transfer from Boston College that ended up being first team all league. He's a lot like him, just in terms of being explosive and attack. So he stepped up. Matthias has really shot well from the from the arc, but overall Matthias has really been solid. PJ Thompson's done a good job. Swanigan's probably made the biggest jump. His body's better. He gets it and he understands. After going through 1 year of experience, he's averaging, I think, around 16, 17 points, 12 rebounds, but just going hard every time when shots go up and just bringing that energy. So we're excited about that. And then Haas is just such a threat down low. We just got to get those guys. And then Vince Edwards, we brought him off the bench the other night. He hasn't gotten going yet, but he's been so productive for us his first couple years. We think he's going to get going here sometime soon. But those guys have turned it over. So Haas, Swanigan and Vince have been turnover prone, and so we got to cut down on those and really help in that department, and I think we can really make strides.
Matt, you talk about your defense, and Ray Fell was probably one of the most underappreciated guys that I can remember, even on any team. I mean, he just did what he had to do, but playing the two big guys together, how much does that impact you guys being able to defend the way you want to defend?
Well, it does impact it. Now, with that being said, Swanigan's really improved in that area in terms of being able to, we switch with him sometimes where before we didn't very much. And we try to give him help in certain matchups, but he's done a pretty good job in comparison to last year. It was really hard for him when everybody goes with four guards or stretch guards. And we're going to have this issue in our next game, in Arizona State. But the thing he's been able to do is just be more attention to detail when he's guarding those guys, but then flip it. Anytime people want to do that, hey, we got to make them pay on the glass and we got to make them pay on the other end with our matchup. That's definitely to our advantage.
Yeah. And playing those two big guys together, obviously Swanigan shooting a ridiculous percentage from the three. You turn it over with your front court guys. So is there anything you can do to, besides just getting them to be just a little bit more solid? Are the two big guys hurting spacing-wise from what you're used to doing, or is it something you guys just have to get a better feel for?
Yeah, and it's it's like a plethora of different types of turnovers. It's the offensive foul call posting up. It's the over-the-back call. It's the 3 seconds. It's passing across your body on a double. It's dribbling and trying to pass out of a double. I mean, just like they'll get four or five turnovers and they'll have four or five different ones in the course of a game. So it's not like five turnovers and five bad passes. So we just try to watch film and try to get them corrected. And a couple times it gets, it's frustration. A couple times it's over dribbling. So we just got to, keep watching film. It's nothing. Their mistakes are things they've been successful at too. So it's not something like, hey, this isn't going to go away. This is going to keep happening. Sure. Anybody who gets the ball a lot is going to have turnovers. And that's what it's a little bit of a downside. We throw the ball inside a lot, and we threw the ball inside 220 times more than the second most in the country last year. And so they're going to get the ball. We're going to keep having some turnovers, but it's definitely something you just got to keep working on and keep talking to them about. But no, the spacing for them to play, that question makes a lot of sense. Like if Swanigan couldn't shoot perimeter shots, people just stay in. But Swanigan, if you give him an open three, he's knocked it down. But he's had a lot of open 17 footers also that he's knocked down to. So that spacing has been fine.
Vince Edwards, I think he's kind of like an X factor with your team. I'm just watching your team and the things that he can bring. Is that just pressure he's putting on himself, or just kind of just not getting in the flow yet? I mean, sometimes the light bulb goes on different times for different kids, right? During the season.
Yeah, I would just say the flow. And sometimes it's, it's the other guys around you too. Like Rafael gave us some athleticism at that other spot. Like Matthias gives us a lot, but he doesn't give us that athleticism. Where Swanigan and Haas give you that size, we don't have in that mix. And so I always say somebody's speed and quickness has got to help the other guy. Well, we don't have that. But when Carson Edwards is in there, he helps those other guys. So sometimes it's just the mix. And he came another night and he had 8 assists off the bench and really played well. And the one thing you worry about it, but, for a guy who's been productive already in two seasons, he's just going to – I think he seems to get in the rhythm. He has shot the ball well from three. And, he's still averaging around like 10 and 5. And so I think his numbers last year were around 12 and 6. So it's not – he's not too far off if you want to go from a number standpoint. Mm-hmm. I just think it's getting into the flow and – you know, making the right play to start games. He's had some tough starts of games. And, you know, just getting a different start now, coming off the bench. And, like you said, trying to get into that flow.
Matt, when we had you on, I think sometime earlier, whether it was summer or spring, you know, we talked about Spike Albrecht because, you know, that was at the time a great get, obviously, right, if he were healthy, because he battled injuries throughout his tenure at Michigan. When you knew that you were going to have him on your roster, what did you hope you were going to get from him?
Just the experience. You know, you can't have enough experience. For a guy who's been through it, you know, you're a little, you know, anticipating you want the top shelf Spike Albrecht. You don't know because of, you know, injuries or whatever. And he really has pushed through some things here, and he made a couple unbelievable plays in our Georgia State game that we had to have a come from behind win, and someone fell on him, and we didn't think it was as serious as it was, and now after, you know, seeing some things, it's like, you know, we don't know how long he's going to be out after talking with him with his injury, but he's been great. He's a good team guy. He understands saying we're just trying to get him healthy, but you know that, you know, he's going to get into a, you know, in big games, especially league games, on the road and not be phased and be able to make plays, make shots. And that's great for us, you know, be able to add that type of experience.
Matt, going to New York City, bring your team to New York City before the start of league play, playing in an event like this. You know, we all have a story on, you know, Jimmy V. He grew up one town over from where I grew up and recruited my brother. But is there any significance of playing in this game to you?
Well, for me, obviously, it's, you know, watching that 1983 team, you know, I think that's no matter what I'm watching on TV, if I flip through and that 30 for 30 is on, you watch it. You know, so it's like become like the Shawshank Redemption for me in terms of like no matter what you're doing, you're flipping through, you know, it's just, it's unbelievable, you know, because when you sit there and you listen to the story, you know, it makes you want to like, you know, I can't wait to see our team tomorrow so you can talk to your team about believing and, you know, and saying, hey, you know, you've got a dream and you got to think for them to do what they did and make that run, especially how they did. Like, until that came out, you didn't really remember. Heck, I was in middle school. You don't really remember how they did it because, you know, they're fouling. They're fouling. That's a heck of a way to get back. You just, hey, what are we going to do to win? We're just going to foul here at the end and hope they miss, and we're going to go down and score. And but that's what I just kind of think about. You know, don't give – I'm a Cubs fan, so it's like, you know, don't give in to things. You know, don't – you know, you got to believe that you can do it, and you got to keep working at it and having those goals of winning your league and going to the Final Four and doing special things like they did and winning the national championship. And then for this, you know, obviously it's sad, you know, and he, you know, passes away and dies of cancer. But for what he did in his, you know, in his last days and now what's carried on, you know, this is going to carry on forever. Just the money that's been raised and the research and that's pretty special. That's pretty special.
Matt, one more before we let you go. We've talked about this NBA draft rule before. You have benefited here with Caleb Swanigan and Vince Edwards returning to your program. There's a good chance, had that rule not been in place, and it was the old rule, they might have just gone, because once you declare right in the past, that was it. So now that you've benefited from it, what are your thoughts on the NBA draft rule?
Well, the thing that I think is kind of gets out there is like these kids are talking about going to these workouts and how the workouts like help them. Like they're working out for like 45 minutes to an hour at these places. Like the NBA has really kind of done their work already on most guys. You know, they're getting ready for that year's draft. And so some of the younger guys that go, sometimes when they talk to them, it's just normal. Seth, you know how it is when you recruit a kid and you go in, you go, you know, I like him. And you tell the kid, hey, I like you. But you're also keeping the kid warm because you don't like him as well as the other three kids that you're recruiting in his spot. But if it came to it, you'd take him. Well, that's kind of how the draft, you know, when they go in and they get interviewed with guys and people say, hey, man, I like you. To them, that means they're drafting them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's not the case because all of a sudden, like, whoa, look, Deontay Davis is at 32, or Draymond Green is at 35, or Carl Landry's at 31. Man, I'm taking them. Well, they didn't think they were going to be there. So in their mind, you know, tricky things happen in the draft. And right as someone starts to pick somebody that goes unexpected, it changes a lot of different things. So we definitely benefited from it. I think going there and the people that are talking to them, if they'll listen to what they're saying, hey, this is what you need to do to make it. But, you know, I had a high school coach ask me the other night, what do you think? What does my guy need to work on that you're recruiting? I was like, well, no, you're doing a great job with him. You got it. He goes, no, I'd really like to know. And I'd say, hey, I'm really not going to tell you. You know, you're his high school coach. We need to have one person coaching him. And that's you. You're the high school coach. You know, if I'm the dad, that I need to be the dad doesn't need to be the high school coach. And the dad doesn't need to be the college coach. The dad needs to be the dad. And if we all just kind of stay in our roles, that's what I told him. I said, hey, man, we'd like to have him. You know, once he gets to college, I'll start coaching him. Because when you can do those type of things, when you mix sometimes in terms of going from college to pro, when people ask me my opinion, what they think of our players as pro prospects, deep down, who really cares? You know, I don't own an NBA team. I'm not a general manager. So, like, all these opinions go out. They don't matter. So when these guys go into these workouts, those opinions do matter. But Seth, you know this from having players. You can talk to somebody in an organization, like a player personnel guy or a scout, and they'd be like, hey, Seth, I love your guy. But maybe the decision maker, you know, that president or that owner, he doesn't love your guy. So you can have 15 guys in an organization and maybe 8 of them agree on it. And 7, you know, they go the other way with it. And that happens a lot. So a lot of time people will pop up and say, well, this team likes my guy. Well, no, one guy in that organization likes your guy. So there's a lot of things that kind of go on with that. And they hear that noise. I think that's probably the right word to throw out there. And they also will hear the one voice that they want to hear saying, hey, man, you can sneak into that first round. And then that's when like an agent comes involved or, you know, a runner or somebody of that nature and say, I'm telling you, you can sneak into it. Well, maybe you can, but that percentage is like 8. And the 80% of it means you're going to be in the late second round. So there's a lot of things, Andy, that get in that mix and you hear a lot of different things. And so it's hard for those guys, I think, as players. It's good for them to go and work out. It's good for them to talk to people. But then when it gets down to making a decision, like I went to the combine and what 33 people play, I walked away in that time and I watched every play. And I thought 4 people played well.
Yeah, I know. I thought we were there.
But think about this. If we went and got some like really, really good college players and you gave us 2 days to prepare, how can we make it look organized? I mean, we went to Spain. We've been practicing since October 2nd. There we have stretches and games. It's like I look at my assistants like, hey, do we even practice? What are we doing? You know, what are we doing? And so basketball is hard, man. It's hard because there's a lot of freelance to it. And you got to keep people in order. You got to be able to give them freedom. There's a give and take. It depends on your team and your personnel. But when you go to a combine and you work out, well, who's going to have the ball now? Well, the guards are going to have the ball. And if you get on a team, it's like, you know, going to a showcase and then evaluating. If you got some guy you're recruiting that's a big guy and he gets with the guard who's not going to pass, it's difficult. So how can that get organized in a short amount of time? Well, it can't. They do the best of their ability, but how are those guys in the combine supposed to look good?
Well, certainly,
I watched all the Big Ten guys, all great players,
right? And they weren't highlighted. Well, it's certainly something that we will discuss, I know, in the future. Matt, we appreciate you joining the show, and good luck tomorrow night. Tuesday night against Arizona State at the Garden.
All right. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be joined by North Carolina head coach Roy Williams. But first, a word from Blue Apron. Listen, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. I just got signed up for Blue Apron, and I promised my wife I was going to handle this. I'm going to make the meal from Blue Apron, so I can't wait to get going with this, and I'm hoping this will be a regular weekly thing where I get the Blue Apron and I make it. So look, it can be a great gift for anyone on your holiday list. Give the gift of delicious food to someone you love for less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week. It was really easy. Trust me, I did it. And let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, even for someone like me, pre-portioned ingredients, and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/courtside. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/courtside. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And now joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, North Carolina head coach, the Hall of Famer, Roy Williams. A couple of injury updates first, coach. First, Joel Berry sprained his left ankle in the second half of your victory over Radford. Your next game's coming up Wednesday night against Davidson. What's the status?
Right now, Andy, I really don't know, and I'm just being truthful. I met with this morning with our trainer as I was finishing my own workout, and they're going to see him at 10:30 this morning. He had a class that they he got to class on time and walked in on crutches, and they're going to see him at 10:30. But it's I'm not real positive about it. I know it's everybody thought it was just a normal sprain after the game, but they're going to do some X-rays this morning and give me some information after the 10:30 meeting.
Okay, so you don't have you don't know his status. What about Theo Pinson, who's been out throughout the course of the start of the season?
They're going to take an X-ray at some point this week, which will be the first one they've taken on Wednesday. It would be the six-week mark, so they're going to take an X-ray at some point this week. And I imagine this is old school talking. Seth may understand too, but it's like to see if the calcium has started forming over the crack and all of that. So, but that'll be at some point this week. So I'm thinking that they said originally 8 to 12 weeks, and I think it's going to fit into that category at some point.
Coach, I watch your team. You know, the narrative of college basketball in November, December is recently been about the freshmen, yet you have this graybeard team with tremendous experience. How comforting is it to have a core group back that really understands your culture and what you want out of them?
You know, Seth, it is comforting. I would choose one other thing to add to it. In 04, my first year back here, we brought everybody back, but we added Marvin Williams to it. So what I'd really like is that old core group there of experienced people and then an influx of one or two great talents too. But for us, Tony Bradley coming off the bench as a freshman has done some nice things for us. But the rest of the guys have been in tight spots before, have played before. And I like that. But I'm not against one and dones. I'm not against extremely talented kids. Everybody acts like, and even as you know, some of the negative recruiting that goes on says that old Roy handcuffs them. I've been looking around. I haven't found any handcuffs, any ropes, any twine or anything. But it is comforting as a coach to be able to say, guys, if we don't have a timeout and I yell out this, you guys know what to do, right? And they say yes. There's no question. That's comforting.
To me, as I watch it, Joel Berry's ability to guard the ball kind of set the tone defensively. I watch your team, and they're so engaged defensively. Does it start with Joel? Is it the experience, or is it just kind of the mindset? Because defensively, you guys have been terrific.
Well, no, you've watched plenty of games. The experience is showing, or you may be, your mind may be warped like mine, but I think exactly the same thing, that Joel's just sets the standard and puts pressure on the guard out front and picks him up at the 10-second line and really makes it difficult for them to get in their offense at the spots where they want to get it into. You know, they're starting their offense farther out from the basket. He's been able to get a couple of strips out there, and he just bothers that guy and does it for a long period during the course of the game. And it gives me an outlet to say, hey, Isaiah, can you not just deny a simple pass when Joel's made his man dribble from the right sideline to the left sideline because he can't penetrate at all and you can't deny? You know, so it does give you something to get the other guys and say, hey, this guy's starting with our pressure. Why can't you do it as well?
Kennedy Meeks has been terrific. I mean, you guys have been terrific getting the ball into the paint. And he's done a nice job of finishing along with Tony Bradley. But did you see this coming in terms of just he's in – looks like he's in incredible shape and much more active. What did he do this summer to kind of get his body maybe in the best shape it's ever been? And it's obviously translating to his game.
Yeah, I think two things. I think one, he didn't allow any break to go back and say, okay, I'm going to eat for a month or anything like that. he stuck with it the whole summer because his weight is not that much different than it has been the last 2 years. He did an incredible amount of work his freshman year and summer after his freshman year. But since then, he's been able to maintain it. And over the course of this summer, I think he did that. He worked hard on his shot inside, trying to explode up more. I think, you know, he was 1 for 9 in a national championship game, and I think that really just really bothered him. And so I think it's motivated him to work even harder to explode up more because that's his biggest problem. Sometimes, you know, he jumps about 2 inches instead of trying to make it a really explosive move. But he has been doing some better things than he is. We've got wonderful hands. So if you throw it anywhere around him, he usually catches it.
Coach, you guys have had a couple players that experienced the draft combine last May, decided to come back. So let's say hypothetically the old rule, which was just a year ago in 2015, had existed where if you declare you have to stay in the NBA draft, if that had happened, what do you think this season would have looked like?
Exactly like it is, Andy, because I've been around a long time. I mean, this is my 29th year as a head coach. I get great information from the NBA general manager, the scouts, those kind of people, before Justin Jackson. And he's the only one that went and came back. I mean, Bryce, Marcus were there, but Kennedy wasn't invited. And so I think, you know, if he wasn't invited, I would have known that feeling from the NBA people before the combine. Just as I got the information from Justin Jackson, they said this is going to be awfully hard to do, but if he goes to the combine and plays great, yes, he can move up a little bit. So I think it's not that big a difference, but I think it's more for the families and the young man to get the information and from the NBA people, not just hearing it from me. I mean, I can tell Kennedy Meeks, Kennedy, you know, I don't think you're ready, but when they don't invite him to the combine, that tells him more than Roy Williams saying, Kennedy, I don't think you're ready. The other thing is the outside people will say, well, you shouldn't believe Coach Williams. He wants you to stay, which is so far from the truth. People don't realize it, but I've got it in facts, in factual information. In the last 14 years, we've had more people leave early for the NBA draft than any school with the exception of Kentucky. And it's because, you know, I'm old. I've been around a long time. I mean, Kevin Pritchard's the general manager of the Indiana Pacers. Milton Newton, that played for me also last year, was the general manager of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Mitch Kupchak, Carolina guy's general manager of the Los Angeles Lakers. So I've got a lot of sources. So I don't really think it would have been that any different from the team that I've got right now, because Justin Jackson, I think, would have trusted me, and I think Kennedy Meeks would have trusted me.
Coach, isn't that really the sad thing? You spend time recruiting a player, getting to know their family. You spend time with them, helping them develop their game and put them in a good environment. And then sometimes, and I'm not saying your program, but the issue amongst maybe the game right now is then some player that wants to leave, he'll find someone to tell them what they want to hear as opposed to what they need to hear. How frustrating is that? You know, like, I really believe that drove Gary Williams out of coaching. Mm-hmm. When the Williams kid, Jordan Williams left, and he listened to an outside, what I call static, I think, you know, Gary about just had it. Mm-hmm. But how difficult is that for you guys? Like, you've had so many good players. You have all these good contacts. You know, how important is it for those, you'd be able to sit that kid down and say, here it is? Or do you think that maybe a kid should be able to go to the combine? If he doesn't get drafted, he can come back and play like they do in hockey or baseball?
Yeah, you know, Seth, it is frustrating. I'll give you a prime example of a wonderful kid. I mean, a wonderful kid. James Michael McAdoo, wonderful family. I mean, you can't ask for any more than those folks gave us. But the people were telling me that he was not going to be a first-round pick, and it would be possibly late second round. Well, other people were saying other things. And, you know, the young man had given us 3 years. I had no problem. It's what he wanted to do. I said, fine. He was not drafted. Now, it worked out great that he got with Golden State and won a world championship, you know, and he's still in the league. But that's the scary thing that you're talking about right there, because other people told them a different story than what I did, and I just gave them the information that the NBA people had told me. And I think you're right. I think those kind of things, something that Gary did get very frustrated with. But it's hard. I don't think there's any perfect rule. You know, LeBron did not make a bad decision. There's some guys that did make bad decisions. I don't think there's any rule that's perfect for everybody. I think you have to work with what you have, and hopefully the kids will listen to the right people. And that's, in my opinion, most of the time the coaches, because we can get it. I've put players and families, I put it on speakerphone and let them listen to what an NBA general manager says to me. And I think that, but you're exactly right. That is frustrating.
Coach, before we let you go, you know, I always marvel at your schedule. I love the fact that you go out and you're not afraid to take your team on the road. You open the season at Tulane. You play this Hawaii game on the way to Maui, which has been dangerous for some schools. at times doing that. Now, some you can't control because ACC Big Ten will choose it, but this time you're at Indiana. You got this Kentucky game coming up in Vegas. You join that. By the way, you're playing Davidson, Tennessee, and Northern Iowa that you did a home-and-home with,
right,
which a lot of schools would not do. What is the sort of definition, or how would you describe your scheduling philosophy in the non-conference?
Well, you know, Andy, a lot of schools do it. Some don't, but a lot of schools do. But I like to have our guys challenged. The difference is, I mean, I'll do some silly things. When a radio announcer at Kansas one time said, you know, I've done a game everywhere except the Palestra. So I called Fran Dunphy and said, can we come play in the Palestra? Which is sort of stupid, you know, that kind of thing. I take some guys back home. But you're right, this year, I mean, the next five or six games, and I don't even know what order, I know Davidson's next, they're pretty doggone good. Then we have Tennessee. We also play Monmouth and Northern Iowa, which those are usually games that people are scared to death about because North Carolina is supposed to beat those teams, and they're pretty doggone good. But 2 years ago, our schedule was rated by the tournament committee as the second most difficult schedule in the country. I think last year it was rated as the sixth most difficult schedule in the country. And, you know, I like to play those kind of games because it gives us a true read. Right now, I'm trying to get a true read on Brandon Robinson and Seventh Woods, two of our freshmen. If we're playing a team comprised of me and you and Seth and two other guys, you know, I wouldn't get a very much of a true read for Seventh or Brandon. And I don't even remember seeing you ever play, Andy, but I know that Seth got had a little game kind of thing. But, you know, so I do like to get a true read.
I was short.
That'd be three of us. But I do like to challenge them so we can get a true read on what our freshmen are going to be for us.
Coach, we appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see Joel Berry and Theo Pinson out on the floor here soon. Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. Everybody have a great day. Thanks, Seth.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And now joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Baylor head coach Scott Drew. And the Baylor Bears have knocked off Oregon and Xavier at home. They beat Michigan State and Louisville down in Atlantis. I think it's hard to argue against the fact that Baylor may have some of the best wins so far this season, maybe the most top 10 wins, top 20 wins, than any other team in the country. Great scheduling, of course. They played it well. But, Scott, let's be honest here. How good did you think this team could be?
Well, on paper, you could see why people didn't expect much. When you lose your senior point guard, you lose a lottery pick in Torian Prince, and you lose the school's all-time winning rebounder, Enrico Gathers, and you only have one senior returning in Ishmael Wainwright. But as a coach, and Seth, you know, you always think the best case, but there's a chance the worst case could happen as well. So we played a very tough schedule. The last 4 years, according to ESPN numbers, we've had the number one strength of schedule in the country. So we've always played a tough schedule. We've been blessed to get a lot of wins this year with it.
Yeah, you got to tell your football program to play as tough a schedule because that didn't cost him in the past. But I digress. Mono LeConte, though, he comes from Miami. And what was so nice was in talking to the Miami staff, they were okay, at least this is what they're saying publicly, with the transfer. I'm hoping that's what they believe privately, that a lot of times we've seen it be contentious with a guy, you know, they're fighting to allow him to transfer and they're blocking and all this. Didn't happen. He has been successful in your spot because he's given more of an opportunity. Why do you think it has worked out so well with that transfer?
Well, I think, first of all, he did a good job at Miami, and those coaches did a great job with him and helped him develop. And then during his year out, he obviously gained strength, matured, and I believe when he was at Miami, they had a bunch of guards, including Angel Rodriguez. So here he's had an opportunity at the beginning of the season. Last year he learned our offense and defense and practice for the whole year, so he felt comfortable in our system. And then this year he's been outstanding with – people all knew he could shoot, but I think defensively he's really improved and taken on the challenge to because we have a lot of great point guards in the Big 12 this year, and he's excited to guard them and be able to be in a two-way player and influence the game on both ends of the court.
Scott, you know, you've always played that 1-1-3, kind of extended it out, been really active in it, distorted pass lanes. It looks like you're playing a little bit more man-to-man. What went into your thought process of – is it Joe's ability to protect the rim, or is it just philosophically you want to be able to be a multiple defensive team a little bit more?
Well, I think whichever defense works, we're good with. some games, Michigan State started out the game knocking in threes, and we were like, we've seen enough of that, and went to man, and it was working, so we stuck with it. Other games, people haven't played as well against the zone, so we've stuck with that. So it's nice having two defenses, and hopefully you can keep them off balance and find one that's working for that day. But with us, it doesn't matter what we play as long as we get stops.
Yeah, Jonathan Motley, his emergence or his development, you know, I think a lot of times people look at your teams and they don't really appreciate the guys you recruit and where they were and where they are now. And how much pride is it for you as a coach to see, one, the kid be patient, which is a rarity in college basketball, and two, his development and being maybe one of the most versatile forwards in the game?
Well, I think you know, too, it really helps when you've had past players that have been able to develop over time, and they can pass on that wisdom to the freshmen, saying, hey, stay with it. I redshirted, or you know what, I didn't play a lot as a freshman, and I got better, and look where I'm at now. And we've had several players like that. I'm Corey Jefferson, somebody that redshirted, and a couple years later is drafted in the NBA. Torian Prince, didn't start until his senior year and ends up being a lottery pick, and he was someone that was ranked 25th in the state of Texas and ends up going 12th in the world. And from Quincy Acey, Epe Udo, a bunch of people that have been able to develop. And I think those guys speak in patience and wisdom and perseverance into an 18- and 19-year-old's ear is even more impressive and more impactful than coaches, because, as you know, they're more influenced by their peers than they are their coaches. So those guys get a lot of credit for helping our guys develop over the years. And then the last thing with that is, you know, in college we practice a lot more than we play. So the fact that Jonathan Motley's had a chance to go against Isaiah Austin, Corey Jefferson, Rico Gathers, Torian Prince, people like that each day in practice, that makes them get better.
You know, you talk about practice, and like after finals, there's a block of time that I think the teams improve in different periods. Obviously, you improve in the summer, you improve prior to the start of your first game. But when you have your players and just your players alone and they don't have classes, that block between the last finals and when school starts again is an important time for a coach. What are the things that you want to see your team kind of improve on during that block where you don't have any other distractions? It's just you and your team and basically practicing games and moving forward.
Well, that's a great time, like you said, to take advantage of. And the first thing is, I think every program tries to get better in the areas that they showed some weakness in their first couple games and in the beginning of the season. And with us, I know every area you want to improve, but specifically in the last two games when we played Louisville and Xavier, we didn't rebound as well as we'd like. So I know we'll spend some time trying to focus on that. And as far as cleaning up the offense, I think we're capable of being a single-digit turnover team. So I think we can do a better job with that, and especially with the pressure we face and a lot of pressing teams and pressure man-to-man in the Big 12, making sure we're ready for that. But also it's a great opportunity to individually help guys get up shots, work on their game, and improve, because you know, once season starts, you spend so much time trying to put the offense in, the defense in, worry about rotations, making sure they're comfortable with knowing the plays, that you don't have as much individual time as well to help them have confidence and making sure they're ready for to put their best foot forward with conference starting. So we'll focus on both of those aspects.
Scott, you've been a Baylor since 2003.
You know, that's a long time.
You and Bill Self are essentially the deans of coaching in the Big 12. Been at your schools the longest. There's been turnover at every other Big 12 school. What do you attribute to your longevity at Baylor?
Well, I think we've been blessed to be able to have good players, because if you don't win, you don't get to stay anywhere. And then we've had good people around us that the community's made it very enjoyable for our players. We don't have a high transfer rate. And I think the advantage when you're at a school for an extended period of time, normally players are close to the coaches that recruit them. And if they're still at that school, they come back a lot more. And I think a lot of our success and culture has been because of the past players that we have that come back in the summertime, that come back during the year, All-Star weekend when they have days off. And they just pour into the young guys. They watch our games. They talk to our young guys. And, again, I think our 18, 19, 20-year-olds, they look up to the guys that are in the NBA or playing professionally. And when they take advice and listen to them, I think that's really beneficial to our program. So I think we've been blessed first and foremost with good players that have established a good culture.
Scott, you talk about the Big 12. You talk about Kansas's success. What is your – I mean, like, I think your league, even this year, you guys could get seven teams in the NCAA tournament if everyone continues to play the way they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Does it bother you guys that, like – so Kansas has won 12 in a row.
It is
what it is. Do you think that should take away from the quality of this conference, from the coaching aspect of it, to the quality of play, to the level of play? I mean, do people use that against you in recruiting? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Well, I think we come back to the numbers, and we'll use the ESPN numbers and RPI-wise. In the last 3 years, the Big 12 Conference has been the number one rated conference, not because of one team, but because of 1 through 10. And I think even if you look right now, I think with Ken Palm numbers, we have 9 teams in the top 50 in the nation. RPI-wise. So it's a situation where why we've been really successful in getting 7 teams in the tournament the last 3 years is because of the depth in the league. We haven't been top-heavy where there's 2 or 3 good teams and a bunch of bottom feeders. It's been competition throughout. At the same time, Kansas is what they've done, winning 12 in a row in today's culture of basketball, where you know you have the one and dones, you have the transfers, the graduate transfers. I mean, it's really tough to sustain. So hats off and kudos to Coach Self and what his teams have been able to accomplish. But again, why the strength of our league has been 1 through 10, and that's why it's been the best and the highest ranked conference RPI wise. In fact, last year was the highest ranked conference since, I think, you go back to 2001 or 2003 with the ACC. That's how good it was last year.
Scott, we only got about 30 seconds here, but I just want to ask you really quickly, Isaiah Austin in the news, being cleared to compete after having to retire due to Marfan syndrome. What have you heard as to whether or not he actually could get back to being playing professionally in the NBA or somewhere overseas?
Well, that's definitely the goal. It's exciting news, and what's great is he's been such a great role model for all the young people out there that have been diagnosed with the disease, and now he has a chance to inspire and motivate and bring inspiration in a different way, because now by him being cleared to play, people that have been diagnosed with Marfan's now realize that, hey, I might be able to be in that same boat, kind of like when you used to hear about cancer back in the day, and nowadays, because of the great research and Jimmy V Week and everything that people have poured into that, most cancers are treatable now. And hopefully with what Isaiah has been able to do with bringing awareness and bringing resources and attention to Marfan's, and then hopefully with he gets an opportunity. Physically, he's fine. He's in shape. He's been working out. Hopefully, he gets an opportunity with an NBA team to play. And when he does, I know that'll be even more inspiration. So, real exciting news. And I don't understand all the diagnosis and all that stuff, but I do know that I see a big smile on his face, and I'm really happy that he has a chance to pursue his lifelong dream.
Appreciate it, Scott. Thank you.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on there. Thanks for all you do for basketball.
All right, Seth, you'll be in New York for the Jimmy V Classic. We talked to Purdue head coach Matt Painter. They'll take on Arizona State, the nightcap game. Duke taking on Florida. We know this. Marquise Bolden is back. Jason Tatum is back. Harry Giles not expected to play. Jeff Capel, the Duke associate head coach, telling me that Grayson Allen and Frank Jackson, who sat out that main game, are expected to play. So almost everyone but Giles should be on the floor for Duke taking on Florida. What are your thoughts?
Well, Jason Tatum's a tremendous talent. You're talking about just watching a little bit he played against Maine. He caught it in the mid-post, scored it, then he posted the ball against their zone, relocated, and knocked down a three. His versatility is going to make him an absolute matchup nightmare. Watching Bolden in that game in limited time, he gets to the glass twice, gets two offensive rebounds. He's a very good passer out of the post. It is going to give them better rim protection. The question is, will they be a better defensive team? Because, you know, if you play Tatum at four and Bolden at five, that's going to limit Emile Jefferson's minutes a little bit. Probably won't affect Luke Kennard, but Emile Jefferson is having a tremendous year. So it's a great problem to have, your Coach K, and they're going to play a Florida team that is extremely athletic, can really defend, very physical. It'll be a good test for those two freshmen and for Coach K figuring out how he's going to integrate those guys within his rotation.
All right, so catch Seth and the gang at the Jimmy V Classic in New York. I'll be doing some wraps on ESPN2. We've got a couple of good games as well on the Deuce on Tuesday night as well. And we want to remind everyone that you can join ESPN and the V Foundation in the fight against cancer. Always the same number. Call 1-800-4-JIMMY-V or visit jimmyv.org to donate. That'll wrap up this edition of Courtside with Katz and Coach G. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz. You can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. Go to that headphone icon to find our podcast. You click on the headphone icon on the ESPN app. And if you're on iTunes, kind of rate us. Give us a little bit of a plug here if you can. And as always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes as well. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.